You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
In March, the Prime Minister's Science, Innovation and Technology Advisory Council released a report to the Prime Minister calling for a change in how science, innovation and technology are funded in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Of the $1.7 billion of government spending on science, innovation and technology, the report identified $839 million for potential reprioritisation. Needless to say, this marks a large shift in how research will be done in Aotearoa, New Zealand, with an increased emphasis on mission-led research, where the government decides what research is funded, compared to investigator-led research, which is competitively funded and curiosity-driven. Within this mission-led approach, the report calls for increasing funding for advanced technology, such as AI. However, many scientists are concerned with what this approach will mean for the areas Aotearoa excels in, and point to the significant disruption that the pursuit of fashionable research, directed by bureaucrats, will cause. So to better understand this shift in the direction of science research in Aotearoa, New Zealand, I spoke with Professor Nicola Gaston, Director of the McDiarmid Institute for Advanced Materials and Nanotechnology and Professor of Physics at the University of Auckland. Kia ora, Nicola. So first of all, the report to the Prime Minister on prioritisation in New Zealand science, innovation and technology system points toward nine principles and structuring investment around four thematic pillars. Now within these pillars, it calls for a shift in funding to a more mission-led than investigator-led model, going from a balance of about 45-55 to about 60-40. Now, what's the issue with this?
Kia ora, Theo. Thanks for asking and thanks for summarising that so well. The issue is, there are issues, let's say, rather than a single issue. This report is the latest in a series of reports, which is maybe something worth starting with, because in this shift from or towards more what they're calling mission-led science, that is something that has to come from existing funding envelopes. And that, you know, seems maybe fair in the current financial context. You know, we're all feeling a bit poor these days, and I'm not the first person to point that out. And so making a case for more money for science or research is a really tricky thing to do. And yet, what this framework is doing is changing a lot of stuff in our science and research system all at once. And that has been going on for about 2 years now. And we've had cuts, this is sort of background stuff, but cuts to things like Callaghan Innovation. There was also money for sort of scientific infrastructure for our publicly funded research organisations that was cancelled. University staff cuts across the country, not purely on account of research funding, but also just university baseline funding. I did a calculation about a year and a half ago and came up with something like 10% of university staff, according to the announced cuts across all of our universities. So that's something like the equivalent of one of our smaller universities that we lost in terms of capacity. So all of that was sort of the background. You know, yes, we are trying as a research system to live within our means, but the Science System Advisory Group report to the Prime Minister that came out a year ago was very, very clear in recommending exactly this shift towards more mission-led research, which is where this second report has come from. It was very, very clear that in recommending change, that change was going to need to be funded, because while we've been doing our best to sort of adapt and live within our means in terms of what government funding is available, it's also very clear that we are massively underfunded by government in New Zealand compared to the international countries that we like to compare ourselves to. So that's sort of the fundamental disconnect between initial recommendations to this government were that actually we need to increase research funding in order to achieve the government's objectives. The government has said no to additional funding, but is still trying to achieve those objectives. And my argument would be that there's a lot of damage being done along that way.
So another standout kind of theme in the report is this prioritisation of shifting that funding to advanced tech. So a few examples of advanced tech are provided in the report, AI, quantum and synthetic biology. So I guess starting off, what's missing in this understanding of advanced tech?
Yeah, sure. So There's two things I would probably say. I think there's a very clear set of three bullet points that I think Judith Collins came up with a year and a half ago, and they seem to be being reiterated constantly. Tech is broader than that. There's also some work by the investment community in the last few weeks. So there's this Young Companies Finance report that came out, which really highlights that startup companies that are getting significant private investment, about a quarter of them are actually in clean tech or climate tech spaces. And so they point to things like AI, which is obviously on the government's list of important technologies, as something that we actually don't have a competitive advantage in. So if we're actually looking at getting economic benefit, and this pillar is called technology for prosperity, I think. So if we're actually looking for that economic benefit, we have to be looking to where private investment is seeing significant competitive advantage that already exists within New Zealand. So I would point to clean tech as being one of the key things that this government doesn't seem to see being part of the puzzle. But the second part of that is kind of systematic in that they've got these four pillars, right? And one of them is technology for prosperity. And the others are, roughly speaking, health, environment, and primary industries.
All and names so that sound very, you know, very great.
All of these things are important, right? Absolutely. But one of the ways I think about technology, and I'm a physicist, also a materials scientist, nanotechnologist, if you like, but one of the ways I think about technology is that it both enables science and scientific discovery enables technology. There's a real feedback loop between the two. And so to pull technology out and put it in the fourth pillar, it really sort of silos it, whereas if I look at this list of things, I'd be like, well, medtech obviously is something that contributes to healthy people. Clean tech obviously is something that contributes to your environmental sustainability. Ag tech for primary industries, you know, you can go on, right? So there's not actually a clear boundary between these different pillars that they're looking to allocate specific amounts of money to. And so how they're actually going to manage that, the actual processes of financial allocation, and how they're actually going to try to grow connectivity between these different areas rather than separate them out into their very specific things, that's part of my worry, that the structure of it doesn't allow that flexibility or that the synergistic development of great scientific ideas and technologies.
Yeah, and in the report, as an example of that kind of shift in funding that we'll probably see, it predicts a $96 million loss in funding for Otago, Auckland and Waikato universities, with many researchers losing their positions. However, it also predicts a net increase in the workforce when considering the new positions generated by investment in advanced tech. Now, in your article, you've pointed towards the words of Sir Paul Callaghan in saying how we have our own kind of, it's important for us to pursue our own sort of like niche weird stuff in New Zealand rather than pivoting towards the examples of advanced tech that the government's given or the report has given, like AI, quantum, so on. Is the report assuming that we can kind of just shift researchers to a different position? I mean, is this going to mean that we're going to be building like our own large Hadron Collider or like big AI data farms in New Zealand? What's it getting wrong here?
Yeah, so it's that shiftability of researchers that I think is one of the really key problems, because obviously there are two things. One is that if you actually want world-class experts in particular areas of science, they tend to be specialists, not so much generalists. Which isn't to say that we don't have great generalists in New Zealand. We do, and especially like graduates who go into the tech sector, often they're the people with, you know, amazingly generalizable, flexible skill sets, which is brilliant. But if you want to be at the cutting edge of, let's say, research in quantum right now, which it's on the government's list, I also agree it's an important area of research right now. So just things that are on the government's list are not necessarily things that I disagree with. I just think there are some other examples out there as well. And quantum would be a perfect example of something where there is heaps of weird stuff that goes on, right? And a lot of what is now being aggregated and talked about as quantum technologies and really important for economic development, which I agree with, is also stuff that Sir Paul Callaghan would have referred to as weird stuff back in the day. And so what he really meant by the term was that where researchers have really deep expertise in an area, this is what the investment community now calls deep tech, right? Areas of research that actually need to spend several years, maybe decades, within the university system in order to develop to a point where there's real IP, something that is known or a capability that doesn't exist anywhere else, and then you actually have something that has massive economic potential, right? So this idea of deep tech is quite intimately connected in my mind to Sir Paul Callaghan's idea of weird stuff. You can't always predict in advance where the technology is going to be most useful. So especially in things like in the physical sciences where you've got measurement technologies, let's say. And so sensing or measurement devices could be things that get commercialised for medtech. You could be using it for some sort of health sensor, or you could be using it in dairy. You could be using it for some sort of measurement of the properties of milk, or you could be using it in some sort of environmental application, right? And so the weird stuff argument from Sir Paul was really about the idea that where you have the expertise, you have to let the expertise develop the capability to the point that it is world-leading. And if instead you have government trying to say to those people, oh, no, you can't work on that thing in environmental technology anymore because we need it to sit in this other pillar, and if the researchers are being effectively forced to move sideways to follow government signals, then you lose a lot of that deep capability generation that actually creates intellectual property. I see that argument from Paul around weird stuff as being quite intimately connected to this. The issues that I have with the report being how much not just the government is trying to choose priorities, but also really take control of the whole system. There's other stuff that's gone on in the funding system that I didn't even mention in my lengthy intro around cuts to the Marsden Fund, cuts to social science and humanities, and so pulling money that had previously been distributed by the Royal Society using very well-established methods of internationally accepted peer review, pulling that back towards MB so that there's a much more one-stop shop sort of mechanism for distributing the funding. And so that level of centralisation and control just, is really getting us to the point where the weird stuff is not going to be recognised or appreciated by the people who are making some of these funding decisions.
Right. Now, last of all, just kind of jumping back to that funding question, you mentioned in your newsroom article a shift towards private funding for clean tech. Now, the government report also marked as one area for deprioritisation areas where public investment can shift to the private sector. Now, is there a threat to areas like clean tech and beyond being dominated by private funding as opposed to government funding?
So I think there's a difference there. I think where you've got commercial work that is private sector fundable, it should be funded by the private sector. The big thing, though, that has been known for a long time, some data in one of Sir Paul Callaghan's old books around how private sector funding tracks public investment in science. And so this is one of the big reasons why the Science Sector Advisory Group pointed out that our whole system is underfunded, because unless the whole system, the whole ecosystem is healthy, we're not as attractive to international private sector investment as we could be. If the whole system is just doing what it has to on the smell of an oily rag, then actually private investment is going to have better odds if it's invested elsewhere. And so that's kind of the tension between the two. There's no way that the private sector is going to step in and fund the weird stuff for the decades before it gets to the point of being able to be commercialised. There's no way, the research behind some of the clean tech companies that are coming out, you know, some of them weren't even looking at clean tech problems when they were doing this early stage research. One of the companies featured in the report, which now works on catalysts to decarbonise or lower the energy of the Haber-Bosch process, which is responsible for about 2% of energy use worldwide. This is fertiliser production. But the whole backstory to the discovery of those catalysts was that they weren't looking for catalysts at all. They were looking at materials that have applications in computing devices. So the idea that you pick in advance what it is that you want to discover is profoundly problematic in the context of investigator-led research. And while mission-led research, you know, saying that you want outcomes in these areas is a good thing, what really worries me is that they've separated that out from the investigator-led part of the research system. So you can have a mission and still engage your researchers in deciding how to deliver on that mission. It's just not clear that any of the funding mechanisms under this mission-led research or strategic layer of the system are going to be managed, run, led by people with scientific skin in the game and the ability to see that this is a real change in what we know, this fills a knowledge gap and therefore there's something of real value here. I don't think you can do that by having a top-down direction of where people need to put their scientific effort.
That was Professor Nicola Gaston, Director of the McDermid Institute for Advanced Materials and Nanotechnology and Professor of Physics at the University of Auckland, on the issues of recent proposed changes in funding of science, technology and innovation in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.